If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. Perhaps you'll agree with me that we are a very conflict-adverse culture. Don't get me wrong, there's plenty of conflict, but we don't like engaging it head-on. Or if we do engage it head-on, we do it in a way that doesn't really help the cause. Notice what Jesus doesn't say. Father Scott said this morning, and it was what I was planning on saying too. Notice that he doesn't say, go and tell everyone, except for the person that has offended you, what they've done against you. Notice that it doesn't say, blast them on social media. It doesn't say that anywhere. Go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And I think one of the lies that we need to see past is that to bring up someone's fault is somehow not loving them. That is a lie. To bring forward in a healthy way someone's fault, especially when it's leading them to self-destruction or hurting other people, that is an act of love. Our culture says to say something that was done is wrong is judgmental. We can judge actions. We can't judge intentions. There is a difference. There are things that are objectively wrong. And sometimes it is our role to share that with the person. So I'm not very good at this either, let's be honest. I have learned a lot in the last few years, especially through through seminary, because believe it or not, people bring problems to priests all the time. All the time. Sometimes it's the priest's job to remedy the situation or help the situation, but oftentimes it's not. So I just want to give you three little helpful practical tips, because Jesus is being so practical with us, I want to be practical with you. There could be so much more to say on the issue of engaging healthy conflict. But the first is to say, unless you have rapport and trust with that person, you're probably not in a position to critique them. If the first thing they're hearing out of your mouth is criticism, they're probably not going to receive that very well. The principle that our counselor gave us at the seminary was, you can critique to the extent that you have supported. If all the person hears from you is nagging, and then you're asking for an additional thing to change, they're probably not going to listen to you. That first step is to realize you need to be in a position of trust and rapport with that person. The second step that I think is so easily overlooked, because we do want to judge intentions and not the actions themselves, we start blending those two things together, is stick to the facts. Stick to the facts. If someone has done something against you, you say, you did or did not do this, and you said or did not say this. You do not say, you were so inconsiderate. You were so selfish. You were so arrogant. You're ascribing intention to their actions. You're not in a place to judge that. You are in a position to make an observation. You did this, you didn't do that, or you said this. You have permission to say what anyone could have observed in the situation. And then along with what they said or did, how did that make you feel? Okay, so again, we first establish rapport. We support them. We affirm what is good in that person so that we can be in a position when it comes time to also be able to say something hard. And then two, we stick to the objective facts. What was said or what was done or what was not done. And then you say, and that hurt me because I felt like fill in the blank. So you've put it upon yourself. This is how I'm receiving this, because they're probably not aware. We want to give them the benefit of the doubt. We establish rapport, trust, through affirmation, support. You stick to the facts of what was said or what was not said, or what was done or what was not done. And then the third, the first two, any counselor can give you that advice. The third is unique to the Christian message, and that's the one I want to really lean into. I want you to forgive that person before you've confronted them. I want you to go into that conversation not expecting an apology, because you might not get it. The thing about unforgiveness is that it binds our hearts and it makes us unable to love. It's like drinking poison, and it will erode your heart. And I want all of you here right now to be free of that. If you're feeling bitterness, anger, resentment, there's probably some unforgiveness lingering in there somewhere. And so it's time to say out loud, because the devil can't read your thoughts, Jesus, I forgive him. Jesus, I forgive her for fill in the blank. You want to know something really, really cool about that? Is that it also liberates the other person so that they're more likely to give you an apology because you've already forgiven them. I don't know exactly how that works, but if you look in the Gospels, there is maybe one or two times that Jesus is actually asked for forgiveness before he forgives them. He forgives them before they've asked because they are bound by their unforgiveness. Let me give you an incredible story. It was shared with me by a wise and very experienced priest who deals a lot with healing and deliverance and unforgiveness. A woman comes to him, and she had been unfortunately abused by her father 34 years before. Through the conversation, he leads her to the point of making an act of forgiveness. Jesus, I forgive my father. And then Jesus, bless my father. There were tears. There was liberation. Those tears are always a good sign. Something has been released. The bonds around the heart have been cut, and the heart is free again. Wouldn't you know it? The next day, she gets a call from her father, who she had not been in touch with all of this time. And he says, will you ever forgive me for those things that I did to you 34 years ago? And she says, I already did, yesterday. He says, I have been praying every night before going to bed, please God, give her the grace to forgive me. And he was not able to apologize until she had already forgiven him. I want you all to be free. I want your hearts to be free. And unforgiveness is one of the primary obstacles to that. And that forgiveness is not forgetting what was done, because she didn't. Nor is it saying that it wasn't wrong what was done, because it was. Nor am I saying it's going to feel like you have forgiven, because you can't help your feelings. You have the power to say out loud, Jesus, I forgive him. Jesus, I forgive her. And then we might be in a position to go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. I would not be surprised if we followed even these three little steps, if these other measures that Jesus talks about aren't even necessary to bring two or three into the situation, to bring the church, like the priest, into the situation. As Father Scott said this morning, I'm third string, okay? You call in the priest when you've exhausted option number one and option number two. The first and the second step to establish that rapport, to name the facts and how they make you feel, and then to go ahead and forgive the person before you've even had the conversation. This is the way of freedom. This is the way of healthy conflict. And so we pray, Jesus, thank you so much. You came to liberate us. Jesus, liberate our hearts from any conflict that we have handled poorly, that is still captivating our hearts. Liberate us, especially through the gift of forgiveness that you have given us. Jesus, we recognize that we have sinned, we have hurt others, and we have hurt you. As we receive your total gift of self in this Eucharist, help us to make a gift of ourselves back to you and back to those that you have entrusted to our care. Jesus, liberate these captive hearts.